That's pretty straightforward. That's a report. Good afternoon, everybody. We are in session. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council on Wednesday, October 17th. Carla, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Wheeler?
Aye. I mean here. I already took my vote. Now you all know. Dang it, there goes the suspense.
Yeah. I didn't know you were going to vote on this.
Good afternoon, Robert. How are you doing?
Very good. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thanks, Robert. Carla, could you please read the first item?
Item 1090, accept the Portland Design Commission 2017 State of the City Design Report.
Colleagues, the first item of business today is to thank the dedicated volunteers who serve on the commission. A number of them are here today. This commission has met three, sometimes four times a month in 2017 and the first three quarters of 2018, and often for many hours at a time. They review land use cases, and they provide design advice. They are a very dedicated and hardworking group of people. It includes Julie Livingston, the chair, who you'll hear from shortly, Jessica Molinar, vice chair, Tad Savinar, Zeri Santner, Don Ballister, Andrew Clark, and Sam Rodriguez. Could you all please stand up so that the council can recognize you, and we'll suspend the rules for a moment. Thank you. I'd also like to specifically recognize Commissioner Tad Savinar, who just completed his service with the Design Commissioner on September 30th, 2018. Thank you. Tad began his Design Commission career back in December of 2012. He sat in over 170 Thursday evening Design Commission hearings and countless other steering committee and advisor roles as a Design Commission liaison, for which he was paid nothing. The volunteer time commitment expended towards making Portland better by design is nothing short of admirable and deserves this kind of public recognition. Thank you very much to Tad for your dedication and service to this very important volunteer board over a period of many, many years. Now, this commission will be presenting their sixth report before the council, but they've been operating in the city of Portland since about 1980, providing leadership and expertise on urban design and architecture and on maintaining and enhancing Portland's historical and architectural heritage. This report comes to council at a very important time for the city and its expanding design overlay districts as development and construction, as we all know, is unprecedented right now in terms of the overall history of the design review. These neighborhoods deserve the appropriate protection and predictability of quality infill that meets our density goals and inevitable growth. I look forward, as I'm sure all of you do, on hearing more today from the Commission members and interested public and those who are committed to supporting the Commission in all of its efforts. Commission Chair Julie Livingston is here to start us off. Thank you for being here. Thanks for your great work.
So thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here today. We have what I think is a very interesting presentation for you. You have already received hard copy of the presentation, and in fact, the hard copy that was distributed in advance has more information than we will present in the PowerPoint today. If you have the ability to view the slides that I am looking at, you see a photo of our current design review staff and commission. This was taken just a couple of months ago, and at the time, Tad Savinar was still vice chair. Our agenda today is to discuss the purpose of design review, share some DOSA administrative improvements, look at some caseload data, and that caseload data spans 2017 and many months in 2018 as well. An overview of projects from 2017-2018, and then the 2017 Design Excellence Award. And finally, some testimony. We have five people here to testify today. And because there is a lot to pack in, I'm going to stick to script. And if you have questions, please interrupt me and ask the questions. But for the most part, I'm going to do my best to move through my presentation fairly quickly. You may have questions about some of the statistics or maybe about DOSA, so please do interrupt me.
Could you just tell people watching at home what DOSA is?
DOSA is the Design Overlay Zoning Assessment and now Zoning Amendment Report that has been here in Council Chamber a couple of times. We will talk today about the administrative improvements, which are the responsibility of the Bureau of Development Services. It's how it plays out, how DOSA is playing out in our hearings room. So beginning with the purpose of design review, the DOSA consultant, Mark Hinshaw of Walker Macy, recommended Design Commission adopt a charter and clarify its scope. And as part of that work, we also reworked the purpose statement that's included in Title 33, and that is what you are looking at here on the screen. Doing this work early in the DOSA implementation process has given BDS, the Design Commission, BPS, and the Planning and Sustainability Commission a strong foundation for DOSA legislative work. The refreshed language also addresses one of Mark Hinshaw's priority recommendations, using the three tenets of design to simplify, consolidate, and revise standards and guidelines. The purpose statement is built around the three tenets: context, public realm, and quality. And work done to date on standards reflects this organization. So the design excellence, context, public realm, and then quality and permanence terms that are highlighted in this slide are really where we are focusing our attention for statements and in the future for guidelines as well. And this is how we organize conversation in the hearings room. So a checklist of a summary of administrative improvements that were recommended through the DOSA process that have been made to date by the Bureau of Development Services. The hard copy includes actually the DOSA work plan, which is a much longer list than you see here. So BDS and the Commission have done as much as possible to implement DOSA and have been very focused on hearings room efficiencies, timeliness improvements, and predictability in all aspects of the process. These are issues that are very important to applicants. And we are finding that early design advice requests are proving to be critical to streamlining our process. Early advice gives applicants greater confidence as they move through the design process and allows them to integrate feedback from the commission at an appropriate time in their design process. And highlighted in blue here, you can see our Twitter handle. We are at Portland DC Chair.
Could I ask you a question about that slide,
please?
So I was reading through endorsements in one of our more prominent local newspapers today. I was reading endorsements surrounding the housing bond that's on the November ballot. And a comment that was made by one of the newspapers was that we have been slow to actually change the design review process to be more responsive to the demand for housing in particular in our community and the speed with which, the urgency with which the community needs to approach this issue. Yet you have a long list of things that you have done here. Is there a way that we could better communicate all of this good work that you have done to the local media to let them know that, in fact, concrete steps have been taken? And how could we help you with that?
Thank you for offering to help. I think that we would be very glad to do that. We often have media in the hearings room. It is largely focused on large, high-profile cases. And most housing developments are not large, high-profile cases. So there is not a lot of opportunity for conversation with media around housing when it flows through the hearings room. But we would be glad to put together some suggestions on how we might do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's very important. So this slide is fairly self-explanatory. It's the annual increase from 2010 to 2017 in the number of cases we're seeing in the hearings room. There were a total of 7 cases in 2010, and in 2017 that was up to 37. So this is just type 3 approvals, and the workload continues to increase in 2018. So we thought that a side-by-side data slice through 2017 and 2016, the two most recent years, would be fairly informative. There's been a 460% increase from 2016 to 2017 in design advice requests and type 3 approvals, and 143% increase in type 2 approvals. So it's not just that commission's workload is expanding, staff's workload is expanding as well. In 2017, the type 3 appeals to council represented 7.8% of our caseload, and type 2 appeals to commission represented 2.8% of our caseload. And I've got a little bit more data on appeals later in the presentation. So this slide looks at hearings efficiency. The green bars are the overall number of type 3 approvals, and the blue bars are the number of one hearing approvals. And again, this is from 2010 to 2017. So in 2017, you can see that we have really been able to increase the percentage of cases that move through in a single hearing. And this is due in large part to the design advice request and the effectivity of the design advice requests. Mark Hinshaw, the DOZA consultant, said repeatedly that an attitude of collaboration is important in having successful design outcomes. And this idea plays out very clearly in the hearings room when all parties, the commission, staff, and applicants, come to the table. An applicant can move through the process in less time overall and with fewer and shorter hearings. Sometimes it takes more than one hearing to get to yes, and this is usually attributable either to the complexities of a case or sometimes a lack of responsiveness on the part of an applicant. So looking at the central city, I find this fascinating. The number and location of buildings approved through the Type 3 process in 2016 and 2017 by neighborhood. So this is 2017, and there is 2016. 42 new buildings over both of those years. All of our central city neighborhoods are gaining a significant number of new large buildings that will impact and change neighborhood character, and the Design Commission has to be able to understand and interpret many different contexts. We also have to be able to consider present and future contexts. So there is a lot at play in Portland's central city. Here is a little bit more on the Type 3 appeals that have been made to council. Generally, what we are looking for is that a proposal meet approval criteria on balance. We are always working hard to get to yes. There has been one denial since 2010. It was the Ankeny Apartments. There have been, three cases where conditions of approval have been appealed by an applicant. One is the Next Hotel, Central East Side. The studio and guild theater building window replacement and renovation work next to Director Park and the Vibrant Apartments affordable housing in the North Pearl. And then there have been a few approvals that have been appealed by the neighborhood. The Press Blocks Tower in Goose Hollow, the Fremont Apartments in North Pearl, and Block 290 Apartments in Northwest Portland. The one denial from Commission's perspective was a case of not all parties bringing the attitude of collaboration that Mark Hinshaw noted to the process. We don't want Council to be the Design Commission, but there are really two issues at play here. Appeals are commensurate with our workload. When we hear more cases, there is more risk of appeal. And then the second is that DOZA improvements include greater public outreach. And so there is more public participation in our process. And it's not unreasonable to assume that moving forward there may be more appeals because there is more public participation in the process. So given how much time we all spend thinking about Portland's housing crisis, we decided to take a look at how housing has been playing out in the hearings room over the course of the past couple of years. This slide looks at Type 2 and Type 3 housing approvals between 2010 and 2017. And again, Type 2 is a staff-level review, and Type 3 is the Design Commission. The blue bars, the top of each bar that's blue, that's housing. And the green bar is all other cases. So we have all heard about the significant increase in housing proposals prior to inclusionary housing going into effect on February 1st, 2017. And you can see the blue bar of 2017 is significantly larger than the blue bar of past years. So it's true that a record number of housing units flowed through our process in 2017. And it's important to note that not all of these approved housing projects are permitted and out of the ground yet. So this is a snapshot of housing cases only, and this time it's by the quarter. Since the last quarter of 2016, that's about the time the rush to beat inclusionary housing began. And again, this is Type 2 and Type 3 approvals. The green bars are Type 3 and the blue bar, sorry, that's backwards. The green bars are Type 2 and the blue bars are Type 3. The second quarter of 2018, you can see, is a significant uptick in housing applications. This slide shows how many of the pre-inclusionary housing vested units aren't yet out of the ground. So Type 2 on the left, Type 3 on the right. Some of these projects are in permitting. Given nervousness around current market conditions, a few of them are up for sale. Not all of these will move forward. But for all intents and purposes, there are about 4,800 housing units in the Type 3 pipeline alone. So this is our last slide before we move to the overview of projects, and it's a look at housing proposals that have moved through the design review process since February 1st, 2017, projects that aren't vested and have an obligation to provide affordable housing units. The Type 2 bar on the left is a standalone, but the pre-app conference, design advice request, and Type 3 bars are cumulative. So there are currently about 3,000 housing units in the queue, in the Type 3 queue. So here we're going to move into the overview of projects from 2017-2018. Here is the real reason the City of Portland values the design review process. We are going to share the images of 15 buildings that we believe really raise the bar on design excellence. There have been many more than 15 since the start of 2017, but these 15 really exemplify creativity, innovation, and a strong response to context. This is a building by GBD Architects. It was designed as part of a modification approval for the Broadway Tower, which sits right behind. That's the large building that's just completed construction that you see in this image. But the small building in the foreground is a small housing building that GBD designed. Their offer was, in order to increase the development capacity for Broadway Tower, was to put affordable housing units in this new housing building on the South Park blocks. It is our belief that this really does a great job with A8, contribute to a vibrant streetscape, and B5, make plazas, parks, and open spaces successful. The Fleidner Building, built in 1905. This was by Jones Architecture. It is a renovation and a little bit of a restoration of this building. It is a quarter block building in the West End and is really, really a significant contributor to the character of this neighborhood. It does a fantastic job with guideline A6, reuse, rehabilitate, and restore buildings, and C3, respect architectural integrity. So on the PSU campus, Hacker has undertaken a renovation of Neuberger Hall. This is a fantastic example of B1, reinforce and enhance the pedestrian system, and C8, differentiate the sidewalk level of buildings. You can see an image in the upper left of what the building currently looks like, and then the larger image is what the building will look like when construction is complete. Now it really doesn't have a ground floor. There are no windows. There's no kind of interaction with the public realm. And so PSU and Hacker are doing a really nice job of making this building be the building that it always wanted to be.
Julie, can we go back to that for a second?
Yeah.
So that's the new Jordan Schnitzer art gallery, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
The thing you're not seeing here is the park facade, because this building, you know, sits right next to the park blocks as well. So it also does a really great job of addressing the South Park blocks. 1010 Northeast Grand. This is 240 units of affordable housing that I'm very close to. C2, promote permanence and quality in design, and C4, complement the context of existing buildings. The building that is under construction right now is the mid-rise in the middle ground, the kind of shiny building.
Can I just put a little plug in for this building?
Please do.
Because I'm old enough to remember when we created the Portland Housing Bureau, then Mayor Sam Adams agreed that we would transfer most of, if not all, the properties currently held by PDC over to the Portland Housing Bureau. The Portland Housing Bureau had a completely different mission statement than PDC in terms of developing properties. This was originally designed by the Westin folks to be either a luxury hotel or luxury condos, and it was going to be a tall, narrow structure, a kind of a Vancouver Point Tower at one point. When it came to the Housing Bureau, it was subject to the guidelines of the Housing Bureau, which was affordable housing. So this is a conspicuous win for the community, because this could have been just high-end condos, and that's what PDC was working with the developer on. And when the transition occurred, we got a chance to pick up affordable housing in a very high opportunity area and a very desirable location.
We are just beginning to install windows at the lower floors. So another Lloyd District project, this one by Works Progress Architecture. This is modular. As far as I know, this isn't moving forward right now. This is one of the projects that has been shelved. But there may be a lot of this in Portland in the future. These are stacked modular units. This does a very nice job with A5, enhance, embellish, and identify areas. This is the very north end of Lloyd. And B4 provides stopping and viewing places. There's a really great pedestrian alley that was developed on the south side of this building.
What do you mean by modular? Are they just Lego blocks?
Every one of those boxes is a housing unit that arrives fully assembled, and then they are stacked together on site and attached.
Are they going to stay up in the earthquake? They're going to stay up in the earthquake?
Yeah, that is one of the strengths of this system.
All right.
Yeah, they are seismically they are great performers.
Thank you.
Also in Lloyd is the Lloyd Center. The group that owns and is working on redeveloping the Lloyd Center kind of piece by piece is doing a very good job of updating this building and making it be responsive to public realm guidelines, especially C8, differentiate the sidewalk level of buildings. And then here, of course, C13, integrate signs. So the Burnside Bridgehead in the central east side is undergoing a lot of change. You see here not only the yard, but another building that is currently under construction at the old Fischel's site. A1, integrate the river, done very nicely with this building. And C11, integrate roofs and use rooftops. You can see some green space at an intermediate level there that makes really nice outdoor space immediately adjacent to Burnside and across the street from the yard. And in Goose Hollow, Providence Park came in for a design advice request with a really nice strategy that responds so well to Portland architect A.E. Doyle's original design for the stadium. A2 emphasized Portland themes, and C10 integrate encroachments are done really well here. Also in Goose Hollow, The press blocks, the Oregonian buildings, are being redeveloped. This tower, as well as the small building immediately to the left of it, and then a building that is almost off-screen to the left. Those three buildings constitute the press blocks development. B4 provides stopping and viewing places. There's a very nice plaza. And C5, design for coherency. Bert Gregory from Methuen is here to provide some testimony today. This is Bert's work, and Design Commission is always thrilled to see Bert work in Portland because his work is so incredibly clear and coherent. In the River District, a small project by TVA architects. This is not in the historic district, and yet the architect did a really great job of developing a loading dock that is along 13th and elevated the outdoor space adjacent to the 13th Avenue Historic District. Just a really nice gesture on the part of a very small building. C4 complement the context of existing buildings, and C7 design corners that build active intersections. Also in the River District, we are seeing an immense amount of self-storage in the central city. It's everywhere, but it is definitely landed in the central city, and that is in large part because so many of the housing units that we've built over the past several years are so incredibly small, and people need a place to put their stuff. So there will be a new self-storage building built at the north end of the Pearl District. This one, by comparison to a lot of what's built around the city, is really pretty nice. They did some active space at the ground floor and did some nice facade manipulation. There is a little bit of glass in this facade. It's not just blank wall. So B1, reinforce and enhance the pedestrian system. And B3, bridge pedestrian obstacles. There were some street connectivity issues at the north end of the neighborhood here that this project is doing much to address. And then in Gateway, responding to the Gateway Regional Center guidelines rather than central city fundamentals, a nice little townhouse development by Ankrum Moisson Architects. A1, strengthen relationships between buildings in the street. And C5, transition to adjacent neighborhoods. This is a really nicely scaled residential development. And up at OHSU, the Markham Hill Design Guidelines, NBBJ is doing a really nice, nice building, the Elks Children's Eye Clinic. The Markham Hill Design Guidelines are structured a little bit differently than others, but Guideline 1, enhanced views of Markham Hill, and Guideline 4, develop successful formal open areas. And finally, this was an appeal. This was a Type 2 case that came to commission on appeal. It's in the St. John's neighborhood. It was designed by Jones Architecture, the same folks that did the Fleidner building. This is a really nice, small residential project. The commission felt is a great fit for the St. John's neighborhood. P1, enhance the sense of place and identity by incorporating site and building design features that respond to the area's desired characteristics and traditions. This is a CLT building, by the way. And E4, create intersections that are active, unified, and have a clear identity through careful scaling of detail and location of buildings, outdoor areas, and entrances. This is immediately adjacent to a small plaza that the city of Portland owns that really does need some attention. But this is a nicely scaled small building in a neighborhood that will likely continue to experience growth. And this was the community design guidelines.
And what was the subject of the appeal?
The neighborhood appealed it. They felt that it did not fit into St. John's. It lacks the storefront character of the smaller one- and two-story buildings in the neighborhood. The guidelines themselves are pretty broad. They allow architects and designers to interpret the existing context fairly broadly, and so commission felt that this was a really nice modern expression of those guidelines. And now our 2017 Design Excellence Award, which is in the Central East Side and is awarded to Hacker Architects for District Office. It is under construction right now. When you travel down Grand Avenue, you probably see this coming out of the ground. I surveyed staff and other commissioners a couple of months ago to find out, you know, what really was the best project that rolled through the hearings room in 2017, and it was unanimous. This building knocks every guideline out of the park, especially A5, enhance, embellish, and identify areas. The scale of this, the scale of the openings, its responsiveness to the context of the Central East Side, all really well done. A8, contribute to a vibrant streetscape. There is a beautiful ground floor of retail space that is just so consistent with the architecture of the floors above. The coherency of this building, C5, is really something we don't see very often in the hearings room. And then also C2, promote quality and permanence in design. The materials of this building, it's a CLT structure, and it's clad with a really creative mortar-washed white brick. There are large operable windows at the upper stories, and then the storefront at the ground floor. Everything just works together beautifully. So this was the unanimous selection of staff and the commission.
Is this a BEAM development project?
I believe it is. And Corey Martin from Hacker is going to be one of the testifiers today, and he will confirm that for you.
Urban Development Partners.
So testimony today, first up is Corey Martin from Hacker, and then Anile Holova from Project, Bert Gregory from Methuen, Tom DeShiara from Cairn Pacific, and Dave Audie from the AIA Urban Design Panel. So Corey, if you'd like to come up.
While they're coming up, could I ask you a question? So there's broad agreement that an active first floor ground floor is very, very important, and that usually means retail. What do we know about the dynamic of retail in the community and the projected demand for retail in the community?
This is a conversation we have every time there is a project proposed in South Waterfront, because South Waterfront hasn't gotten there yet. And so the real goal is flexible spaces that can be programmed as active use rather than single-purpose spaces, because they just don't provide the flexibility that we want over time.
So in the near term, what kind of options do you have other than pure retail?
We've been seeing, especially in South Waterfront, we've been seeing a lot of work-live spaces. And, in fact, Bert Gregory, the projects that Methuen does often at the ground floor, have work-live spaces so they can be used as office, retail, or residential. It's a matter of, you know, kind of the proportions of the space.
Thank you. Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Corey Martin. I'm a design principal at Hacker Architects, part owner of Hacker Architects as well. I joined the firm in 2011. And so before that, I founded Path Architecture with my former partner, Benjamin Kaiser, who also served on the design commission at some point. So I've led projects through the design review process for my entire career, beginning with staff reviews early on in North and Northeast Portland, and then including projects built in historic conservation districts, which are really important, and then more recently with reviews by the Design Commission in Northwest Portland and Southeast Portland. And as I was thinking about this testimony, I realized that possibly coincidentally, both my current business partner, David Keltner, and my former partner, Benjamin Kaiser, have both served as design commissioners. So
you're destined.
Yeah. So interestingly, that's allowed me to experience being on both sides of the table. So I've seen those guys go through the process of helping others navigate the design review process, and I've also navigated the design review process myself with my own projects. So an interesting point of view that I've earned through that process. So my personal goal is to design extremely humane spaces that support true well-being and connect people to our amazing landscape in the Pacific Northwest while also protecting it. And so building on that, our firm's goals really are aligned, but kind of expanding that into taking a really long view when we're designing. We want to design new buildings that contribute to our city in the long term, because all of us, you know, will be gone long before these buildings are gone. And so that we take that very seriously, and we're kind of known for acting with a lot of restraint during the design review process relative to a lot of firms in town. So above all, we want to participate in the continued success and creation of this great city and create meaningful connections between people and nature through architecture. And so for us, the quality of design in Portland is higher than in other cities that we've visited. So, you know, personally, when I see what's happening in other places, I'm really thankful that Portland has such a high standard for design. You know, when I go to places like Austin or Seattle, they just don't have quite the lasting design strength that our buildings do, and they're built with many of the same components at the same cost. So it's interesting to see that happen, you know. They don't, somehow, they're not getting to the same level of design as Portland. And so the average level of design here is incredible. We're a design city, and we're known as a design city. The bar is very high. And so, again, as a designer, this standard makes my work pretty challenging, but that's okay. The high standard helps me develop mastery of my craft. And so we've won a lot of design awards, both here and beyond. But I have to say that, honestly, when we win an award in Portland, it feels really good. It feels like almost better than winning a national design award. We also work in other markets extensively. And so when we bring our Portland design process to other places, we're pretty much good to go. So our clients are impressed. They appreciate that our process helps them realize their projects more efficiently, more cost-effectively, frankly. And from it stems from the ways that we help them navigate through the approval processes in their communities based on our experience here, and then how our process helps them make critical design decisions early in the process, which, again, design review forces us to do. And so much of why this is the case is because we have a healthy design review process in Portland, and I think the design review process makes our entire city stronger as well. It helps to elevate Portland's brand. It helps keep our economy strong by drawing people and businesses that value design to our city. All of this is about the larger impact that the design process and the design review process has on our city. Specifically, though, for myself and our firm, the design review process provides a framework that makes the design of our projects more efficient, clear, more impactful, and cost-effective. So I know that a lot of firms, or maybe it's just a few, they've been resistant to the process, and that the amount of oversight can seem daunting to people. But having been through the process many times and having seen the direct impact on the projects through the eyes of my partners who have served on design commission, I think it's worth it. It's really important. It's part of why those firms and companies were attracted to Portland in the first place. I'd argue that rather than making the design and entitlement process more difficult, it makes it more efficient. Design review is just one part of the process. So it helps what can be a complex process seem more efficient and more kind of driven by logic and kind of looking to the big picture. So the design review process, all the way from the DAR, which is optional, as you know, through the final approval, provides a really clear structure that helps us and helps our clients make their projects successful. The design review process helps us to make hard decisions earlier in that process, and it helps us strip away the less important goals and ideas and focus on key issues. It helps guide us towards ideas that will last. It helps us strip away our egos and think about the community that the project serves, because, again, after all, we're going to be gone long before these buildings are gone. So thank you.
Thank you.
And Anule is next.
Hello. There we go. Okay. My name is Anule Halova, and I'm a real estate developer here in Portland, Oregon. Our company is called Project, and there are three partners, including myself. Today I'm testifying on behalf of myself and not any of the boards that I'm on, including the Land Conservation and Development Commission. So Project is a values-based developer that focuses on sustainability, well-designed projects, and we build with quality and placemaking as our foundation. In our 9 years of existence as a company, we have permitted 12 buildings in the city of Portland and six of buildings in other cities in Oregon. For the Portland project, six have gone through either a Type 2 or Type 3 review. I'm here to testify in support of design review and the work the city staff and the Design Commission have made to develop a process with solutions that are beneficial for the city of Portland and its inhabitants. As background and for full disclosure, developers, including myself, do not like discretionary processes. So if you go to any developer at any given day and ask if they will voluntarily sign up for design review, they will always say no. But that is not because design review is not good for the city and leads to good outcomes, or because the system is broken. That is because a process, any process or extra layer in permitting, adds an element of the unknown, which is risky for schedule and budget. However, I think the question at hand that you may be presented is, one, is the design review good for the city and its citizens? And two, is it too onerous of a process so that it impedes development or adds exorbitant cost? The answers would be yes, it is good for the city, as demonstrated in the staff presentation. And no, at this time, design review does not impede development. It also does not add exorbitant cost, as long as the developments are done right. In other words, the system is not broken. What few people understand is that developers, we behave as a cohort in many ways, learning from each other's worst and best practices and even copying each other. If a developer or an architect sees a project that goes through design review quickly, they take note about what is done well and what could be improved in their own application to make their process go faster. We, and hopefully others, have learned that the key for passing through design review the quickest is, first, hiring a good architect. Second, guiding the team to focus on placemaking and improving the public realm. Third, getting early assistance and feedback from the city staff. And finally, working in good faith through the pre-development phase to keep the approved design intent intact. Given this, the majority of developers doing good work are getting through design review well and quickly with little damage to their budgets. It has become a predictable and understandable process. However, there are some developers and architects that have become dismissive about the process and thus find themselves in a process where the design is brought to the commission prematurely with less thought into how these significant buildings are contributing to the benefit of our citizens. These developers are now learning through the process how to improve design, and the city is better as a result of this. Given the importance of good design in our city and also the strong desire for processes to be clear and objective, I believe it is very important to keep highly qualified design commissioners on the commission, people that believe in good design and are experts in the discipline. This is critical as it allows for a more consistent and well-directed process and greater predictability for developers and design professionals as they navigate the process. It also ensures that commissioners don't nitpick on things that are a matter of taste. In the future, there is a potential opportunity that a system such as design review won't work anymore. This is not the case with design review right now, which has been getting better over time. As with any processes, there is always room for improvement. If I had a chance to make improvements, I would ask the city staff be given more discretion to approve changes made by the design team after the design review application has been approved. The reason? To account for things that are not yet known about the project at the beginning when they submitted for design review. Design review happens early on in the project when the constructability and viability of a project are not yet solidified. For example, the cost and availability of materials change very often during pre-construction. Additionally, the constructability of the original design may not prove feasible, cost-effective, or aesthetically pleasing when the design details are worked out. With the ethos that more density is good for our city, infill and growing up rather than out for a sustainable is right for a sustainable future. Providing housing of all types is needed in our city, and that city processes should not add unnecessary cost to a project, I believe the city staff can be given more flexibility after design review approvals to allow for the natural changes in design. And the ability to enforce the rules and stop developers or architects that do not build what they say they're going to build, and not to punish the rest of us for doing good work. This will lead to a process that is more flexible, allow projects to go more seamlessly through the approval and construction process, and will continue to be highly regarded by the city. Thank you for giving me time today to speak in support of the design review process and the Design Commission.
Thank you. So what did you mean when you said that in the future design review may not be necessary?
I didn't say necessary. Oh, okay. I said basically there could be a moment at which it's broken if it's not, you know, continually improved, or if commissioners are not qualified to give good design advice. I think then it could be relooked at. But at this time, with the expertise on the Design Commission and also the approvals in process, it's definitely really good for our city.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, next up are Bert Gregory and Tom DiChiara.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Bert Gregory, a design partner at Methuen with offices in Seattle, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. I was the lead architect for Heartline in the Pearl at 13th and Johnson, and currently designing the Press Blocks residential tower in Goose Hollow and the Pepsi Blocks on Sandy Boulevard. I'd like to commend the mayor, city council, design commission, and city staff for what I consider the best city in the country for its fostering of a quality urban experience, equitable development, and great design. It's my favorite place in the country to work, with its great zoning code, its high expectations for design, and excellent design commission process. You are responsible to design a city for the next 100 years, and it is commendable to review and update the land use review process on a regular basis. Portland's current design review process works extremely well, and modest improvements are always helpful, but compared with my experience outside of Portland, the review process and commission sets the bar for other cities to follow. It is interactive, collaborative, efficient, and consistent for those applicants that are well-prepared and seek excellence. The high caliber of the design commissioners, very experienced in design and development, makes projects a better fit in the community and exceeding design expectations. Design advice requests are a critical advisory tool that allows for a collaborative exchange of ideas with the design commission, neighborhood citizens, the designer, and developer applicant. I believe that community outreach, then a three-step commission review, is important for success. At the conceptual phase, review of the massing and approach. At the second DAR, schematic level, ground floor, fenestration, and materials. And then design development at the land use review level to review details and implementation of the commission's advice. Be cautious about reducing DARs and not having the commission's eyes on the details, as these are successful aspects of Portland's process and is what helps make a great city. The Design Commission and the collaborative BDS staff are not slowing things down. A high-caliber design and development team to start the process is critical to a cost-effective, speedy, and successful collaborative process in any jurisdiction. Portland's design review doesn't cost more money. In fact, it's less risky and less expensive than in many jurisdictions, if you are well prepared and do the proper due diligence. In all cities, there's areas to help speed. Interdepartmental coordination sometimes can be an issue in any city, and sometimes important that's true too. We would suggest some improvements to formally tie and integrate the land use process with the public works permit process, with a timeline for each for completion. We would suggest perhaps a senior-level PBOT decision maker attend and be part of the DAR and LUR Design Commission meeting process. Consider a PBOT Design Commission staff being located as part of BDS. Also consider having BDS staff represented at public works permit reviews to also speak of the design standards and commission goals. Increasing staff, if needed, to increase processing speed would be beneficial. Review and consider if it's possible to reduce the BDS completeness check from 21 to 7 days and move from a 51-day wait period to 30 days. Those might be actions that would help the staff and the team. The state of the city design report had some great suggestions. Some thoughts and comments: make sure the commission evaluation checklist is the right checklist and supporting the goals for a beautiful city seeking design excellence. Set DIR at one half block and above, not a half block and below. Having a city center design commission and a neighborhood commission should be explored. That might be beneficial to not have the commissioners there 4 weeks a month. the suggestion that the community design standards and neighborhood-specific design guidelines need updating and coordination is a very good suggestion. Updating these fine documents while reinforcing Portland's excellent DAR and LUR process is a great opportunity to continue to make Portland one of the most livable cities in the nation. Keep the bar high. You're designing the next 100 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
So you had a whole list of very good suggestions. Are these just your suggestions, or are these ideas shared broadly by members of the commission?
The suggestion for improvements?
Yes.
I don't know. I think speaking with the commissioners would be a good idea on that. This is from experience. Improvements in collaboration and interdepartmental efficiency is always a good strategy, and it's difficult in any city.
Good. Any chance I could get a copy of your written testimony?
Yes, I have those with me.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mr. Mayor. My name is Tom DeChara. I'm principal and owner of Cairn Pacific. We're a Portland-grown development company that's been most active in the building out the Slabtown neighborhood in Northwest Portland on the old Conway campus. That's kept us busy most recently, but I've been in the business for about 24 years now in different capacities. Started out for eight years as an architect with GBD, so I have experience coming from that side of the business, and the last 16 years as a developer. I've been a frequent flyer in front of Design Commission over those years. I think preparing for this testimony, I came up with 14 buildings that I've entitled through the years, totaling about 2,700 residential units, plus a few office buildings and some grocery stores, including the New Seasons Slabtown store that we're particularly proud of. So I've been over in front of commission many times during those years, different commissions, and seen the process evolve quite a bit over those years as the city has grown tremendously during that time. Early in my career, as an architect, I'll admit that the process at times drove me crazy. Sometimes as a developer, I've complained about the process, the time it takes. It's sometimes unpredictable nature. I've had more than a few healthy architectural debates with staff and commission through the years. But overall, if I look at it in its entirety, I would say that the process does result in better buildings citywide that would otherwise not be the case. It's helped ensure that we were building a city that will hold up over time with good streetscapes, great livability, and a quality pedestrian experience. That also ensures that we're listening to our neighbors. To see proof of all this, I think all you have to do is look to the east side of Portland, outside the design review overlay zones, for see projects that are getting built without design review scrutiny. Now, there's a big difference. I'm a longtime east sider, and I lament some of what's happening to east side neighborhoods that haven't seen the scale and scope of development that we see in the downtown de-overlay zones. So I see a lot of missed opportunities there, and I personally am one that would advocate for extending the design review overlay versus pulling it back that you may hear from other folks, but there's a big difference in quality. And I would say as a developer, have to compete with those buildings now. It didn't used to be necessarily the same submarket as it is today as the city has grown. There's no real difference on an east side and a west side building, and having the same set of rules I think is something that we should be encouraging. So while the process can be lengthy and unpredictable at times, which, as was said before, developers don't like unpredictability, I appreciate that staff has always been accessible during the process and works hard to get to an approvable project. It's not always easy, but there's always a path to get there, in my experience. My most recent project, for example, in Slabtown called Saltwood, was a two-block project containing about 350 units. We got through in one hearing without a DAR with unanimous vote. There were some circumstances on that one that paved the road for a smooth process, but it can be done if you work well with staff early, work with neighborhood, build support, as is mentioned, hire a good local design team, and really focus on the design guidelines and understanding the process. I think where people trip up is the people that don't go through that process and show up at a hearing without a positive staff report and not having gone through those steps. You have to kind of go through the process in order to get a good result. So, I mean, there are certainly, you probably hear a lot about projects that get stuck in design review process, but I think there are reasons always where that happens, and using good local talent certainly helps avoid those. So with that said, I do have a couple thoughts. Some of these have been touched on in terms of how the process can be improved and streamlined a little bit. First, empowering staff to use discretion and have more discretion during the process, and particularly after the process. As was mentioned before, there are often small details that change through the life of a project as it moves from design development into construction, things you can't anticipate at the design review level. So having staff have a little bit more discretion to kind of work through those details without triggering a new hearing is something that I would really encourage. And I know there are reasons in the past where certain projects have made changes that have caused changes in policy, which maybe I would say are a little overcorrected of late. We've been getting, you know, check sheet items on very, very small things that may have changed from a design review application that aren't really significant. So I would encourage, you know, more empowerment of staff to use discretion on what's really important, so to not clog up the system with little things. That's it's kind of been happening a little bit lately. I would encourage staff to focus on compliance with design guidelines. I think sometimes we get maybe into conversations about style that, in my view, don't always have a direct relationship with context and design guidelines. So keeping it to the design guidelines is always important in my mind. I think it's okay to approve a great project without changes if it comes through and is deserving it. We don't have to make changes just for the sake of making changes. And that being said, I don't think commissions should be afraid to force bad projects to start over if they're not following the design guidelines, and that they shouldn't have to apologize for that. I think they get criticism sometimes for projects that truly do need to be rethought before they move through the process. And then lastly, on the DAR process, this is something that, you know, didn't exist when I first started in this business, was introduced as a way to get early feedback from design commission. It started out as a pretty informal, let's have a conversation about it. I think over the time it's evolved into almost a mini design review, which is, does cost time and money and a schedule. So I my view is they should be used for more specific circumstances when there are unique circumstances you need to deal with, or you're deviating for whatever reason from a design guideline or a code guideline, but not necessarily a matter of course of a process. I think if you, like I said, if you follow the process, follow the design guidelines, and build your team and address those concerns, you should be able to work through design commission without a DAR. I think over all the years and those projects that I mentioned, I've never had a project take more than two hearings to get done. So maybe I've been lucky, but doesn't mean there hasn't been a lot of conversation on those, but you can get through there if you do your homework before. So in summary, I think while there is room for improvement, I think we're talking about small tweaks, not major overhauls. As was mentioned before, you know, this is a complicated business. It takes time to get through the details. These are buildings that are going to outlive us all, so investing the time up front is an investment well made.
Thank you.
So, and Tom, Council is looking at two images of the two Saltwood buildings that were in the hearings room last week. So two blocks in Conway that were done in one hearing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Okay, one more person to testify, and it is Dave Audie of the AIA Urban Design Panel and Holst Architecture. Dave is in Colorado this afternoon, and so he sends you this video. Oh, but there's no sound.
If we didn't have a technology hiccup, it just wouldn't be a normal hearing.
The fact that there is actual video is surprising to me. I am not the person who made this happen.
Greetings, Mayor and Commissioners.
You did it.
My name is Dave Audie, and I'm wearing three hats today. First, representing the Urban Design Panel, a multidisciplinary team of local architects, planners, and landscape architects from the AIA, the APA, and the ASLA that assist the city in maintaining high standards of urban design by reviewing projects and policies related to our built environment. Second, representing my company, Holst Architecture, a firm of 40 designers in the Central East Side that have been helping make Portland special since 1992. Third, I'm representing myself as a citizen and resident that fell in love with this city the first time I stepped off the MAX in Pioneer Square 20 years ago. Thank you for allowing me to speak remotely today as I'm traveling for a large project in Corvallis. The Urban Design Panel has been closely collaborating with BPS and design review staff on the Design Overlay Zone Analysis, or DOZA, process since its inception. In fact, early workshops and outreach facilitated by the Urban Design Panel helped identify the need for DOZA in the first place. While the process has been lengthy, its initial results have been extremely successful. Ask any architect that has been navigating design review over the past few years, and they will tell you that the process today is more efficient, more consistent, and more productive towards creating better buildings and places than in recent history. Positive change is happening. Now, the next steps for DOZA are critical. Crafting new guidelines and standards that will define what kind of city we want to be. So far, we like what we see. Keeping things simple, with a version of the Ten Commandments of Urban Design my friend and mentor Patty Tillett recommended, the new guidelines are clear and focused on the right priorities. We strongly urge total support from City Council for BPS to work hand in hand with Kara and Tim and their team.